delighted to welcome back the marketing director, Janet Gover, the artistic director, Tony Hammerkaiser, and actress Gina Chimners of the Kalamazoo Civic Theater. Welcome, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'll start with Tony, I think. Tony, you arrived as artistic director last season and have really brought a lot of vision, energy, passion to this community theater that could, you know.
Thank you.
The final big musical, big production of this season is War Paint, if I'm not mistaken, because I know there's tons of activity always going on. Children's pieces, pieces for full casts and pieces for smaller spaces as well. But this is kind of the bit last hurrah for the season.
It's our last adult hurrah for the season.
Okay.
Because what we're doing is we're whetting the appetite of the parents, and then what we're going to do is let the parents take their children to see Pippi Longstocking, which is following our production, which is also a musical. It's a play with music, but there are 15 numbers, so we're excited about that as well.
Okay.
But programming-wise, it made sense. We gave something very adult to the adults, and then we give the kids what they need as well. So we're happy for that programming.
Janet, when I've heard you walk down to welcome guests to or welcome the audience to a show, you usually do a whole preview of the season and you end up talking about War Paint.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it you've tried to explain each time?
Well, this is a new musical. It's never been done in this area and people aren't familiar with it. So I would ask people if they've heard about War Paint. If they, I might get one or two people applauding. And I said, well, and this may or may not be politically correct, I said, it is not about the Indian Wars in the Wild Wild West. Because when people think War Paint, they think of, you know, Indians painting their faces and going to war. And so I would explain it's Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden and their great rivalry throughout from the 30s to the 60s. And then you would hear a, oh, in the audience. So it's educating the audience to what this is about. So it's an interesting title for an interesting show. That's for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So. The paint women use on our faces.
Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But I heard the really great analogy this morning. Christine Ebersole, who played Elizabeth Arden on Broadway, in the role that Gina plays, Elizabeth Arden, she mentioned that, you know, makeup during the time of Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, the only people that really used makeup were stage actors and prostitutes. And the interesting thing, coming from an acting background, that I was thinking about is makeup does empower an actor because it gives you a shield, and you're able to become anybody that you want. You can pull out aspects of your own personality, and you wear that out on stage, and it gives you a certain confidence. It gives you a certain bravado, and I believe that's what these women wanted to achieve. They wanted to give women the opportunity to invent themselves in their own image versus the image that somebody else imposed upon them. And I think that's a very empowering thought. And that's really what the play's about, I think, at the heart of it, empowering women.
You said it's a brand new musical. Was it on Broadway?
It was on Broadway. It started at the Goodman Theater, sold out to record houses. They developed it there with Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole. Several Chicago local actors were also involved. And actually, Kalamazoo native, WMU grad Barbara Marino was in the company as well. So, and the composing team, Scott, Frankel, Michael, Corey.
That's right.
Michael
Corey. Oh, thank you. Oh, my gosh. It's 10 o'clock and we rehearse late. But they're an amazing team. They wrote the musical Grey Gardens, actually, which Gina starred in here in Kalamazoo the last time it was performed. And they developed this work alongside those actors. They looked at Christine Ebersole and Patti LuPone as resources, and it was based on the Lucy Woodall book from 2003 of the same title. And also there was a documentary called The Powder,
the Powder and the Glory,
which was also done on PBS, which was the book also spawned. And they took both those pieces of work and they thought, this is an amazing story about these two women, Helena Rubinstein, who came from Krakow, Poland, late 1800s, and
Elizabeth Arden.
Elizabeth Arden, who was originally
Canada.
Canadian.
And her original name was
Florence Nightingale Graham.
She already had a famous
name.
She
had a famous name, as did many, many young girls at that time. But yes, because a lot of girl babies were named after Florence Nightingale because she was a hero.
A female
so
hero.
Many people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so she came from a farm family in Ontario. Mm-hmm. So they were both immigrants. They both, Elizabeth Arden comes to New York and decides to reinvent herself as a horsewoman, a noblewoman, embracing the waspiness, if I could say that, of the time, which a lot of immigrants embraced. They wanted to become American. They wanted to let go of any ethnicity and embrace that American dream. Whereas Helena Rubinstein came onto the scene, and she was exotic, and she brought a lot of European culture to New York City when she arrived. So that you couldn't have picked two better rivals than Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, because they came from two different worlds and their aesthetic was completely different. And yet their existence and their rivalry, even though they never met each other, has created the beauty industry as we know it. Ulta 2 would not exist without Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden.
The time period in which we're talking, they were very young women in the 1920s, and their businesses got going in the 30s. Is that about right?
No.
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 Their businesses were going at turn of the century. So Gina can speak to this a little bit clearer than I can.
Arden opened her first solo salon in 1915. She worked for a couple other ladies, went to Paris, learned about how European women did skincare, and became fascinated with makeup over there. Sitting in a restaurant one night, she watched the women dancing, and she thought they looked so beautiful. And it took her a little while to realize it was because they had mascara on and eyeshadow. It was very subtle, but it made them look so beautiful. And so in her eyes, that's the way makeup should look on women, and why shouldn't women wear that in their everyday lives to go to work or to go to, you know, events? And so she introduced makeup to her society patrons, the people who came to her salon, and said, you know, why don't you just try wearing mascara and a little rouge to your event tonight? And people did. And then other people at the events would notice, you look so beautiful, and they would say, well, I went to Elizabeth Arden before. And so that grew. Her company grew so fast that by 1918, she had to have a warehouse. She had a chemist who was working for her. He had to have a laboratory. I mean, it just grew very quickly.
She had to figure out production,
mm-hmm.
packaging,
mm-hmm.
networking,
mm-hmm.
What social media? How does she?
Yes, but what's fascinating about it was that she was a brilliant PR mind, and she supplied the suffragettes with lipstick,
red lipstick,
and it was their signature. It was the signature of suffragettes. So she was very political as well. So that's kind of lovely. They both mm-hmm. were very, I think they're both political in their own ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to remember, these women were multimillionaires before women had the right to vote.
Oh, yeah. Helena Rubinstein sold just her American business to the Lehman Brothers in 1928 for $7 million, upwards of $7 million mm-hmm. in 1928. They thought they wanted to get into skincare and to makeup. They couldn't run it. They were losing money. It was just like, you know, a sieve. So when the market crashed, she bought it back for a little over $1 million. So she made $6 million on that.
And the interesting thing was Helena Rubinstein was so savvy with business, she instinctually knew to pull her money out of the stock market 6 months before it crashed. So she pulled all her money out, sold it to Lehman Brothers, went to Europe. The stock market crashes. She's still wealthy. And then she comes back and she gets the lion's share. So there were very savvy women.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Arden's business increased during the Depression,
yeah.
which was just, you would not think.
Yeah.
But those luxuries are what we turn to during meager times. Mm-hmm. She even talks about raising prices during the Depression because women wanted to pay for quality. If you drop the price, people don't necessarily think it's quality of product.
It's like, oh, you know, they dropped the price because they thought we couldn't afford it. It's a pride thing, you know, like I'm not going to buy that. That's only a dollar, where, you know, I'm going to save my money and buy that $3 item because that, you know, is better quality because it's $3, obviously.
So the psychology of it.
Expense
amazing,
adds
right?
value. That was her thing. She just, you know.
Two real-life women, Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, are portrayed on stage by Gina Chimner and your
Carrie McNulty from Grand Rapids, Michigan. She's come down to perform with us, and we're so lucky to have her.
Okay.
She's an exceptional performer and also a WMU alum.
We are talking here on a Friday, April 26th, and the show opens next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be at the main stage of the Kalamazoo Civic Theater. Between then and now, all the finishing touches added to the show. Scope, I'd love to know how large the cast is, how many choreographed numbers are required. I think there's music throughout. I should full disclosure say that not only am I on WMUK, I also play music, much like my coworker Mark Tomlinson, in pit orchestras around it's the town. And I will be in the pit for War Paint, and so I do know a little bit about what the music requires. It's a lot. It's a great jazzy high energy high skill score.
Absolutely. I think one of the orchestra parts was one person was assigned to play seven instruments. And, you know, normally in orchestras you have doublers, but that I don't even know what that would be.
Yes, there's the demands on reed one are five instruments, and I play four of them, so I'm working it out.
It's unbelievable. And so the fact that we're able to do this musical and debut it, we're so excited to be able to debut it. You know, this time last year, Stephen Carver, our executive director, and I began talking, and he called and he says, listen, we have the opportunity to do this new musical called War Paint. And I said, yeah, it just closed on Broadway. He said, yeah, they will give it to us and we had certain caveats to do the show. We were able to meet those caveats. And so we started talking about production, and one thing led to another. We were very specific at the beginning, saying we didn't want the cast to be too big, because the skill sets are so specific that everyone in the show had to be an exceptional singer. There was just no way around it. So if people that auditioned, they had to walk in, and we put them through their paces, and we've ended up with an exceptional company. But we have 22 people on stage, but we also have 12 people off stage in our pit chorus, and they're extraordinary singers. So the sound we're able to produce is quite remarkable. So I think vocally, it is as operatic as musical theater gets, with this lovely jazz background, right? The stylistically, it's all over the place. Thank God, because it satiates all palates. There are about five production numbers in the show with dance. We were working on our turntable last night, dancing production numbers on the turntable. It's spinning around, and as we have furniture, you know, easing in and easing out, and choreographing the entire thing in front of our new beautiful digital psych that we've installed. It is breathtakingly beautiful. You know, only a handful of theaters in the country have this, and we just acquired it. We've just installed it, and it will debut with this production.
Excuse me, did you say digital?
A digital psych, cyclorama.
Psych?
So
yeah, you're gonna have to say that for everybody.
Well,
yeah.
Back in the day, you know, a normal backdrop, we would fly backdrops in at the Civic. You know, we have it's a 90-year-old jewel. And over the years, we've had to update because of electronics. People require, we have to be able to see people on stage in a way we didn't, you know, in 1929. So as technology increases, a lot of those fly lines over the stage now are handling electronics versus scenery. So how we bring scenery on and off stage is really difficult. So we've been presented with problem. And we're also presented with the problem of the material. A lot of the material that's being produced now is cinematic in scope. So you could be doing a scene and 3 minutes later you're in a whole different location. How do you handle that? Well, the solution is a digital psych. We're able to change locations on the back wall digitally, but it looks so beautiful, so elegant. We have the latest technology, and it's so beautiful that doesn't even look digitalized. It looks as if everything looks hand painted. It's quite breathtaking, and so we're so excited that David Kine and Anne Marie Miller, who's our lighting designer, they've worked and sound designer, they've worked in tandem. Our fantastic crew has assembled this most beautiful steel set, Art Deco towers that hover over the set with six spot operators on each tower. And so when we were handed this Broadway jewel, you can't help but to produce it in the way that it was intended. And it's intended to be this elegant piece that represents these two iconic women. So I think there's something for everybody in the show, but I think people are going to be very excited visually with what we're able to offer our audiences.
Tickets are available through the website kazoocivic.com or call the box office 343-1313. There's seats available starting next Friday when the show opens, and it will continue through May 19th. There will be Sunday matinees and performances at 7:30 Friday and Saturday for the next 3 weeks, starting next weekend. War Paint is brand new, and it's a point of pride that the Kalamazoo Civic has the first crack at mounting a production in Michigan. Is it even beyond Michigan? Is it sort of a regional premiere?
Well, all we know is we weren't even given scripts. They were faxing us scripts up till a few months ago, so the scripts weren't even published. So it's hot. It truly is hot off the press.
Yeah.
So we're very, very lucky to have it.
Gina, I wonder if you would talk about the song that introduces Elizabeth Arden, Behind the Red Door.
Behind the Red Door. She created Spas, I guess you would call it. And the movie The Women, there's several scenes that take place in a spa where they go to do their exercises and get their nails done in the jungle red, and that actually in the movie was filmed at the Red Door Spa in New York. And so it was a place where Elizabeth Arden was very much into good skin care, taking care of the body. She, even at 70 years old, she practiced yoga so she could do a headstand, and she was just an amazing person as far as discipline and focus. And so she brought all that into women's lives. Take care of your body, take care of your skin, stay out of the sun. She had a spa, a country spa, and people would go there, and even during the Depression, they would pay $500, $600, $700 a week to go and stay there and do exercises and eat prune whip was one of the things she made for her clients. And it was all developed by these very, very famous cooks and chefs that created these, basically not necessarily vegan, but these ways of cleansing your system and eating very pure raw food, not the way we look at raw food, like with juicers, but a very clean way of eating. And she really stood by that.
Maybe she and Kellogg had a lot in common.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes,
because
very much
women,
so.
Yeah, because people were not eating things that were good. It was heavy on meat and starch and light on vegetables, especially in the cities. People didn't have access to a lot of fresh vegetables.
And what women would do is, to escape all of this, they would visit Elizabeth Arden's salon in New York City that famously had that beautiful red door. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when they walk through, they experience what we're about to hear.
Yeah.
From the new musical War Paint, that's Behind the Red Door, and it's sung in this recording by, is it Christine Ebersole?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the Kalamazoo Civics production starting next Friday, the Elizabeth Arden role goes to Gina Chimner, who is here this morning. Mm-hmm. What a jazzy number.
I know. So what an entrance for a girl to get. Wow.
So it sounds very swingy, jazzy, but the actual scope of the story goes, what, through 30s, 40s, 50s? Television
60s,
is part
yeah.
of it.
Yeah,
60s.
And
oh,
in the 60s.
A
absolutely.
Big part of it.
It's interesting how, you know, people, they hold on to what they believe in, and then as time progresses, you know, they're both incredibly innovative women. You know, you look at what they were able to do. They were able to see holes in the market, and they were able to create, you know, when Helena Rubinstein passed away, she had over 150 patents. Mm-hmm. She created waterproof mascara.
And the mascara wand.
And the mascara wand, what? Which was, yeah.
Yeah.
She did. So so when you use your wand in the morning, that brush, that's because of Helena Rubinstein. But the reason why she developed it was Elizabeth Arden had developed mascara on her own. She was the person that developed the mascara. So what happened was Helena was challenged by her and said, how do I beat her? So what did she do? She develops waterproof mascara, hires 100 ballerinas to swim during the World's Fair to debut it, just to stick it to Elizabeth
oh, yeah.
Arden. They loved...
And her heaven scent.
Yeah, please.
She created the perfume Heaven Scent, and to introduce it, she put the little bottles in tiny little baskets with...
Parachutes,
and had them just tossed off the roof above, and they came floating down
on Fifth Avenue.
On Fifth Avenue, and women were like, "Oh, it was just," and they didn't
dream.
Really, you know,
marketing
precursor
geniuses.
It or anything. It's just that they saw groups of women, they would, and then they'd be looking up, and of course, it attracted more women. But these little teeny heaven scents were just falling down. From
and
the sky.
We have to remember, they're very savvy, so they hired two really savvy men.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was Helena Rubinstein's assistant, Harry, was homosexual, and she kept him on because he was a genius, but she could not, she didn't condone his lifestyle. She felt it endangered her brand. In the meantime, Elizabeth Arden's married to Tommy, and he is her ad man, and she will not advance him in the corporation because she sniffs that he wants to take over. And all these women are very, they were very savvy. What ends up happening is they end up leaving each other's corporations and going to work for the other person. So Helena's assistant goes to work for Elizabeth. Elizabeth's ex-husband goes to work for Helena Rubinstein.
So it's really a kind of a partner swap.
It is a partner swap. And
or I would say.
And they arrive with recipes, the formulas for both of their products, and they reveal it to each other. It is, you could not write, it's, you know, real life. My mom used to say, if everybody read each other's book, nobody would believe it. You can't believe, you can't believe that this is actual, it's based in truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the lovely part about it is they never met.
isn't that a difficulty for your stage play?
Well, I'll tell you, it creates such a beautiful, it creates the most beautiful duets I think I've experienced in the theater. There's a duet in the theater called If I'd Been a Man, where they pass the sentiment back and forth to each other. In their separation, they're so much alike, right? Mm-hmm. And they share the same sentimentality. They share the same ideas and thoughts. And so in their separation, they realize that they're very, very similar,
There's,
I think.
Only one other person out there can understand what she's going through.
Exactly.
And it's maybe they've never come face to face, but that presence is a rival and yet a kindred spirit in a way.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what's lovely about that too is rivalry is healthy in the way that sometimes it creates us, it gives us the need to be better. The benchmark is raised, and they continually raise the benchmark for each other through the 50s. And during that time, television came out, and we have to remember when television came out, television was not a legitimate art form. Nobody looked at television as something legitimate. Anybody in the theater world would not be, or in Hollywood, be caught dead on television because it was too commonplace. So these women shunned television, thinking we can't downgrade ourselves to this new fangled invention. And then enter Charles Revson. Charles Revson had been an albatross around both these women's necks. He tried to sell his products to both Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein, but they shunned him. They called him that man. And he, speaking of which, he knew that they called him that man. And to stick it to them, he created a man's cologne called That Man, which is hysterical. Mm-hmm. But what happens is they ask Helena to sponsor quiz shows. They turn them down. Charles Revson sponsors the $64,000 question, and he becomes the number one.
Yeah.
Now, Revson sounds an awful lot like Revlon.
That's exactly right.
He is
the creator of Revlon. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, the sad part of it is 2 years ago, Revlon purchased Elizabeth Arden. So in the end, and he also purchased Helena Rubinstein's penthouse after she passed. And so it's interesting. They all wanted to one-up each other. And in the end, I think Charles Revson, unfortunately, wins.
But only because they were dead.
That's right. Oh, please. And if they could come back and haunt him, I'm sure they would.
They perhaps are doing that.
I'm picturing people tuning in right now to 102.1 and wondering, why are we talking about cosmetic titans of the 40s and 50s? Let's remind listeners that War Paint opens next Friday at the Kalamazoo Civic. It is a retelling of a true story about Elizabeth Arden and Helena Rubinstein and the massive empires they created. And we get to the heart of who they were.
We do. And, you know, Carol, often in a musical, a lot of musicals, contemporary musicals, the books are not as strong as you would like them to be. This could be a play in its own right. So the book is so compelling. So people that gravitate towards plot, this show has it. It feels like a musical play.
And may I say, it feels refreshing, too, because there's not just one, but two female leads who carry the show.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's lovely. It's lovely.
Why don't we hear If I'd Been a Man? Here's a moment where both of them share a similar brain, but again, remain separated in real life.
If I could wish time away and rewind my life somehow, who would I be now if I'd been a man? If I'd been a man.
That's another number from War Paint, a brand new musical written by Scott Frankel, lyrics by Michael Corey. We just heard If I'd Been a Man, and I'm going to say he borrowed from Der Rosenkavalier, the wonderful chromatic descending lines that sound very much like Strauss and have always evoked a bit of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's one of the I wish or I want kind of songs.
It's interesting how sophisticated the score is. I think there's a lot of homage, a lot of tributes to a lot of composers in the score. You hear different themes coming up, and because I think what that does is there are a lot of contemporary nods. So I think what it does is it takes a classic form and then they throw a little contemporary nod inside, so it satiates all palates. I think it's just a really smart score.
This is a brand new musical, just closed on Broadway a season or two ago, and it's now the final grown-up production of the Kalamazoo Civic for the 2018-2019 season. It opens next Friday and continues through May 19th.
And, you know, Kara, I just want to mention, you know, we're so lucky at the Civic. You know, the Civic has always been innovative in selecting new works. You know, we were the first people to produce Raisin in the Sun outside of New York. We've always been very proud of that fact. And I'm proud at the end of our 90th season that we're able to give our audiences something that we're known for, and that is bringing shows fresh from New York that have not been seen by anybody else. So we're really proud of that fact.
This is an important step for, you know, the creators of the show, actually, right? Because after a show closes in New York, does it live on? Who knows? Mm-hmm. It's determined right now.
And it's interesting, the investment of the original company members. You know, I know of a handful of them, and they've been in contact with me. They're curious about it because this is their baby. You know, they lived with it for 2.5 years. And so for them to hear that we're producing it, they're excited about it. And so there's going to be a lot of Chicago people in the audience to see the show, to see how it's going to fare on its own. It's a fresh production. We look at it very differently than they did in New York. But I feel technically, and I feel talent-wise, I think we have just as much to offer with this company. And it's heartening, too, to be able to look at something that hasn't been produced so much, and audiences will be able to come and be able to experience something just fresh and new without any preconceived notions. Oklahoma, it is not.
Janet, I would like to ask you to remind listeners how to get in touch and get their tickets reserved at the Civic, and then maybe we could maybe take a peek ahead at season 91.
Absolutely. Tickets are available online at kazoocivic.com, kazoocivic.com. And, of course, our friendly people in the box office are always there to help you from 10 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night, 343-1313. And as a marketing person, I kind of likened this show to Billy Elliot last year, where not a lot of people in the community were real familiar with that show. And, you know, so the first weekend, you know, we had good audiences, but by the third weekend, you couldn't get a ticket. So I am urging everybody to avoid that quandary now and get your tickets for next weekend while you can, because I think this one is going to catch fire by the third weekend, and I don't think you want to miss it.
And, you know, if you know, my mother has passed, but if my mother were alive, this would be a show I would love to bring her to on Mother's Day. It would be fantastic. It's such an empowering story about women, and what a great way to honor your mom.
And nostalgic, because... my mother has passed away too, but I remember her talking about using eyebrow pencil to make a line on her leg, and then she used pancake makeup, but Elizabeth Arden actually created a tan, like soft tanner, that you would put on, and once it dried, it wouldn't get on your clothes, but that's because there was no nylon or silk during the war, so she developed that concept of doing that. And I remember my mom telling me about that. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, my mom never left the house without eyebrow pencil and lipstick. That was it.
My my mother's family came from Malta, but those women would wake up at 5 a.m. and you'd see those makeup mirrors flash up. Their husbands never saw them without their makeup. Mm-hmm. It's a cultural phenomenon. If you think about it, some people, makeup is incredibly important.
And can I say, Elaine Kaufman's costumes for this show?
They're breathtaking.
I mean, honestly, I get a lump in my throat. They're so beautiful. I mean, this for Mother's Day, that's an awesome idea. And it's just going to be beautiful.
And we have 2-for-1. Our choreographer, Jennifer Hudson Prinkert, is fantastic. She has been assisted by Lisa Denklau, our education director as well, who's the assistant director. But she also is our wig stylist. Mm-hmm. So we have beautiful wigs on a stage. I'm very excited.
Visually, it's going to just be beautiful. Beautiful. And I can't tell you how many people have said to me, I'm going to get some friends together and we're going to go have dinner and then come see the show. It's just going to be, I don't think there's been anything like it in Kalamazoo for quite some time.
Well, that makes
we
me, I'm
have about,
happy about that.
6 minutes left in this hour. So if we can devote a couple minutes to looking ahead to season 91, which is your baby, Tony, you put it together. It's anchored by some fantastic musicals, starting with Matilda in September.
Yes, we open with Matilda. We're very excited about it. Michelle Hopkins, a civic veteran, is back to direct Matilda. Lisa Denklau is choreographing. Marie Kerstetter is our music director. We have an audition workshop tomorrow. We're excited to have hundreds of children running around auditioning and learning how to audition. That's followed by Anne, which is going to be in the Carver Center. I'm excited. I'm going to be able to direct my first play at the Civic, so I'm thrilled about that. It's a one-woman show about Governor Ann Richards. Mm. And it is compelling, and I think one of the best plays I've seen in New York in the past decade. It is another really, really beautifully written play and relevant. That's followed by our CYT production,
The World Goes Round.
Oh, first. And The World Goes Round first. Yeah. Thank you, Janet. Janet's good. I'll pass this over to Janet. She probably will
know. I know the order
of
them. Tony knows.
I just know the names.
Just chime in. Our Reader's Theater production on the main stage will be the Kinder and Ebb review, The World Goes Round. Mm. And that we're going to play for 2 weekends in October instead of one next year. And then we do our CYT production of Ken Ludwig's The Three Musketeers for the youth. So there will be lots of happy children sword fighting.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. Well, we figured if the girls are going to get Matilda, we got to give the boys some swashbucklers.
Yeah.
And Ked Lundwig has written a really beautiful new adaptation. It's a comedy, and we're very proud to give the kids some really substantial material. They're really excited about that production. Followed by our holiday offering, which is Elf the Musical, which we're so darn excited about. I'm very excited because I'm working with our production staff and conceptualizing the entire production. I've never been able to conceptualize a show, so I'll be involved in costume, props, set design, have my hand in that as well as directing. And that is going to be followed by
Tick, Tick, Boom,
which is, before Jonathan Larson wrote Rent, he wrote Tick, Tick, Boom.
Right.
And it's currently being produced by Lin-Manuel Miranda into a film. So we're very excited to be able to produce Tick, Tick, Boom for our audiences. If you love Rent, you'll love Tick, Tick, Boom. Followed by
Born Yesterday,
which is another relevant play written
so
in 1948 and as fresh today as it was when it was in 1948. You will draw a certain parallel between some very famous person who's running our country and the lead
you
antagonist.
You have to find a Judy Holliday.
Oh, and you know what? We're so lucky. Our volunteers are so skilled. I'm sure somebody's going to show up that is really
perfect
for the part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do Art Nemitz, who's been a anchor in the theater community in Kalamazoo forever, wrote a show called Romance Guaranteed. And we're going to produce that in the Carver Center next opening on Valentine's Day.
Fantastic.
So that's kind of fun. And after that, we'll be
ready for your close-up.
Oh, we're getting close to the close-up.
Frozen Junior.
Frozen Junior.
Okay. Yep.
And then we have our Reader's Theater production of August Osage County.
And a race. too goes in there in
Race,
March.
Yes, in March on our, which is David Mamet's most recent play. We're excited to premiere that. And then we close with
Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard. I'm so excited to direct that play as well.
And then our big announcement is we're going to be a part of the Penguin Project, with information to come on that, doing Annie Jr. That's a whole nother interview in
that's
itself.
Right. That's right. But we're very proud to bring that program.
All right. Well, let's finish with some music. And we have so many great tracks we could choose from here. Maybe we should hear Helena, though.
Oh, of course.
This is a one that features Helena Rubinstein called Step On Out. And I'd like to thank Janet.
Oh, this is Back on Top.
Back on Top, like I said.
Okay. Helena is the cause of Step On Out, one of the causes.
Oh, okay. Gina, Antonia, and Janet, thank you for joining me this morning. The show opens next Friday. War Paint is the title. Go to kazoocivic.com or call 343-1313 for tickets. Have a great week of rehearsals, and I'll see you there as well.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
It's so wonderful to be back in Manhattan. The daily press is here to meet my boat. You simply are no words and you may quote.